Hi, I'm Faith Mitchell, President and CEO of Grantmakers in Health. It's my pleasure to present this podcast of the 2016 Terrence Keenan Leadership Award in Health Philanthropy Acceptance Speech. This year's recipient is Amy Berman, Senior Program Officer at the John A. Hartford Foundation. GIH established the award in 1993 in honor of Terrence Keenan, the founder of GIH, and a remarkable grant maker whose vision, values, and humility inspire philanthropy to this day. The Terrence Keenan Award honors outstanding health grant makers whose work is distinguished by leadership, innovation, and achievement. Ms. Berman's dedication, willingness to take risks, and drive to improve quality of care embody the spirit of the Terrence Keenan Award. Here's her speech with introductory remarks by Robert Hughes, President and CEO of the Missouri Foundation for Health.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob Hughes, President of the Missouri Foundation for Health and a proud member of the GIH Board. And it's my pleasure to welcome you to today's Terrence Keenan Award presentation. This afternoon, we'll be recognizing Amy Berman, Senior Program Officer at the John A. Hartford Foundation. So the Terrence Keenan Leadership Award honors outstanding individuals in the field of philanthropy whose work is distinguished by leadership, innovation, and achievement. First awarded in 1993, the Leadership Award reflects Terry Keenan's unique contributions over more than four decades in health philanthropy. The selection committee has a challenging job in choosing from among many deserving nominees, as you'll see on your screen, the committee. Let me acknowledge this year's committee and thank them for their work. And as I call your name, would you please stand? So, Bobby Barker, St. David's Foundation. Sophia Chang, California Healthcare Foundation. Anu Gupta, Fannie E. Ripple Foundation. Eric Kelly, Quantum Foundation. Handy Lindsay, Ruth Mott Foundation. Francis Sheehan, Brandywine Health Foundation. And Chris Wyant, Caring for Colorado Foundation. Please join me in thanking all of the selection committee members. It was my pleasure to chair that committee. As chair, my job was simply to facilitate the conversation, and the rest of the committee members vote and make the selection, so they do the hard work. We really appreciate it. It's my great privilege to introduce Amy. She's a remarkable leader who has woven together a professional career and her personal life story to have a deep and enduring impact on the lives of patients. You can read Amy's full bio on the conference app, and I encourage you to do so if you haven't already. But let me add just a few comments. Her professional accomplishments were summed up well by one of her recommenders, a grantee, who said, quote, "Amy is an active intellectual partner in strategic planning and direction, connector, helping my organization develop key partnerships, and a stalwart and committed advocate for improving the health of older adults in the U.S. Amy provided all of this guidance and support for years before she was diagnosed with stage 4 inflammatory breast cancer. Amy's diagnosis put her, like all patients, in the middle of the healthcare system. Boundaries that conventionally separate the professional and the personal faded away for Amy, and her courage, her forthrightness, and her dedication led her to, as she has described, choose a road less taken. She has the vision to see a path through the chaos and complexity and competing priorities in our health system and uses her personal experiences to catalyze change. She's become, and here I quote from a colleague, among the most powerful and effective spokespersons in the world for the meaning and impact of palliative care during serious illness. A crucial function of the Terry Keenan Leadership Award is to remind us all of what is possible and to inspire us in our own work through the example of our colleagues. And Amy is a wonderful example. As one person commented in recommending Amy, I cannot think of an individual who grasps more deeply the fiduciary responsibilities of grant makers to address the urgent and highest priority needs of our society. So at our lunch table today are several of Amy's friends and colleagues from other foundations, including Kate O'Malley from the California Healthcare Foundation, who nominated Amy. But no one from the John A. Hartford Foundation is here today. That's because right now they are in a board meeting. So they sent this message. To our dear colleague and friend, Amy Bierman, the staff and trustees of the John A. Hartford Foundation send you our deepest, warmest, and most heartfelt congratulations on receiving the Grantmakers in Health 2016 Terrence Keenan Leadership Award. We are so proud of you and your amazing contributions to our foundation, health philanthropy, and to improving care of older adults and anyone facing serious illness. It breaks our hearts not to be with you as you receive this award. But please know that we are celebrating you at this very moment in our board of directors meeting. And no other group, save your family, could sing your praises more highly. Let us offer a few accolades from our very privileged position of working by your side every day. Amy, as a grant maker, you were bold, visionary, strategic, problem solver, an opportunity creator, and a connector extraordinaire. Incredibly generous, you have used your own deeply personal journey with the healthcare system to inform your work and the fields. And finally, but certainly not least, as a co-worker, you are profoundly giving of your time, creativity, and kindness. Each one of us at the John A. Hartford Foundation can testify to the many moments where you have freely offered your aid, comfort, joy, your keen intellect, and your gigantic heart. Congratulations to you on receiving the Terrence Keenan Award. We could not be prouder, and we are grateful every day for the tremendous honor of working with you. It's my distinct pleasure to introduce Amy Bierman and present her with the 2016 Terrence Keenan Leadership Award. Amy.
I'm overwhelmed. It's an overwhelming thing for somebody to say that you're a leader when you are part of many, many, many teams. So I want to thank every one of you in the room. I'm going to talk today about my version of leadership, which I'm going to call leading shoulder to shoulder. I don't know how better to say it than none of us leads from the top. We all lead alongside. So I want to give special thanks and remembrance to Terry Keenan. I was in the room with Terry Keenan, but I never actually got to talk to him. But over the years, I've heard that he was a very quiet man, and he was a person who ran deep. He just was a visionary person. 946 grants, and the very first grant was to Meharry Medical College to support the development of a workforce. This is a historically black college, to have more primary care physicians that look like the communities that needed to be served. This is a deep, deep man. He also did something that has been important in all of our lives, and that's the establishment of Grantmakers in Health. This is our community. This is how we come together to share ideas. None of us is as smart as all of us. This is where we learn. This is the font. It's been the oracle. So Terry did a great thing. Since people talk about Terry as having been a very quiet man, I don't know if you know these two facts. Did you know that he was a Golden Gloves boxer? And that he also was a fighter pilot, an aviator? What this means is that this is a person who had, as an aviator, that 30,000-foot vision. And as a Golden Gloves boxer, he was a person who was willing to fight for the things that he believed in. I think those are two attributes that drive many of us, and Terry did it so well. I hope Terry would have liked my favorite quote about leadership. It's a little bit different, but this is from Robert Jarvik, and he is the person who established the artificial heart. Just so you know, he also was a John A. Hartford Foundation grantee. I'll read it for the people in the back of the room or the people in the front who don't want to take out their glasses. Leaders are visionaries with a poorly developed sense of fear and no concept of the odds against them. That's what a leader really is. You have to be willing to take the risk. You can't be stopped. You can't stop yourself from doing the things that are important. I think Terry would have liked that. So today I'm going to talk about leading shoulder to shoulder. I'm going to talk about aging, which is not the work that all of us do. It is the work that I've been engaged in for my entire professional life and my personal life. But a lot of the things that we're going to talk about relate to all populations, and they relate to disparity and inequity. I'm going to talk to you about partnership and risk-taking. I'm going to share a story with you, but I'm going to start out with introductions. So, the John A. Hartford Foundation, we are not in Hartford, Connecticut. John A. Hartford was a person. I'll tell you more in a moment. New York City, that's where we are. National Foundation. We're not Hartford Insurance. John A. Hartford was a person. Who was that person? Does everybody remember the old AMP food store chains? Okay. So the Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company, the AMP, was established by John A. Hartford's father, and John and his brother George later became CEOs. They didn't have children, and all of their monies, when they passed away, went into this foundation. Foundation started in 1929, but in the 50s, most of the monies came into the foundation. Fortunately, it's AMP food money. So what we do is we're all focused about improving the care of older adults. That's everything that is our mission, very focused. And we've funded in the range of $500 million since 1982, focused on aging. So we've certainly given more than this amount, but this is when we decided to focus specifically on aging, care of older adults. So I want to talk a little bit about aging, very briefly. This is my favorite aging picture. So these are actual surfers in California. The oldest is 89 years old, and that's Woody with the long blue boxers. Aging can be done well. It is possible for people to live a good life until they don't live a good life. And we don't do a lot to support that, but everything at my foundation and many other people in the room contribute to approaches that are going to change that, that are going to help people live this good life. Of course, you know, older adults are arriving at the rate of 10,000 every day. If you look down in Florida, that's the darkest state that has the most older adults. You can picture people driving, blue hair. And this is what the projection is like for 2030. And you see that there's one state that's not quite as dark as the other states. Does anybody know what the state is? Utah. Utah has the highest birth rate, but it also has the highest number of centenarians, people over 100. So Utah is actually as aging a state as any of the others. They have the oldest old, so they have a lot to think about. These are the issues that I think about when I think about leadership. I think about care that doesn't fit patients' goals, people's goals. Everybody uses the word patient, but it really is people. Failure to inform people about their health and their treatment options, misperceptions around things like palliative care, an extra layer of support to help people when they get serious illness, lack of advanced care planning. We don't necessarily provide the right kinds of care when people need it most and they're the most vulnerable. And then, of course, we have a crisis, really, in both caregiving and dementia. This is going to be an explosion. I'm not sure if all of you know this, but the average age of somebody who is a family caregiver in their 40s, we're going to see that population cut in half as we have a doubling of older adults. So we won't have the workforce unless we think of creative solutions. These are big problems for the country. So there's no greater value than care and outcomes that are concordant with a person's values and goals. So the kinds of work that I've been engaged in have been around supporting that person, that older adult, to live that good life. More Woodies. Those are things like work on transitions of care, improving the ability of people to safely come home from the hospital and not return within 30 days. Transitions between providers. Impact. This is integration of behavioral health into primary care. Behavioral health is so poorly addressed and siloed. This group, Grantmakers in Health has one of the most impressive behavioral health groups. Can I see the hands of the activists in the room? The behavioral health group. This is really stunningly important work and needs to be integrated in healthcare. Behavioral health is not different. It's not separate. It is at the center of the bullseye. There are many other things that we've done, and I think I'm going to just highlight for you the last one, which is work that we didn't develop. The work was developed by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and this is the Center to Advance Palliative Care. It was also developed with support from Soros and many, many, many other funders, but we came to this late. We weren't one of the people who developed this work. We stand on great shoulders. We stand on the shoulders of funders who helped establish this field. This is something that I think we really need to talk about. Not just doing the work that we do, but how do we work effectively together, which also means taking up the gauntlet of other people's work and taking it to scale. So I've got a couple of truisms that I want to talk to you about in terms of grant making. Chris Langston, who was my program director, he used to always say, make new mistakes, not the same old ones. What he really was saying is, make sure that you have learned as much as you can learn from others about how to begin to do the work so maybe we can sidestep some of the puddles. We're going to get into new puddles. It's going to happen. But the more I could meet with other people who were doing this work, talk to the other funders, learn from the experts, the foundation's precious resources would start in a better way. We'd have a greater ability to have impact. And the amazing part was that having those conversations also helped us develop really wonderful partnerships because we wanted to do work that had meaning and we wanted to do it with others if we could have the right impact. This is my truism. For those in the back, you can't give birth to half a baby. By that I mean, do not fund something if you're not funding it enough to actually function. I know that the resources are precious, and maybe we have to do less grants, and maybe we have to stick with things longer. But this is so important. Make sure that what we do counts. Make sure that we go deep, like Terry would have done. Stay with things until they get done. Work together, put the resources in, and get the impacts. Don't give birth to half a baby. Partner shamelessly. There is nothing that I have done that I haven't done without the help, support, generosity of people all around this room, without the help and time of the experts. I can't even begin to tell you there is not a stitch of work that I have led. I have worked shoulder to shoulder with others to do anything that I have ever been able to do in my personal life and in my professional life. We are nothing without others. I was sitting and talking with Anne Monroe earlier today, and she was also talking about this, how it's the connection to others that makes for our success in life. And I told her what my favorite quote of all time was. Okay, I love the Robert Jarvik quote, but my favorite is, an arch consists of two weaknesses, which together form a strength. In other words, we can't fully be strong without others. That was Leonardo da Vinci. That has been my favorite quote for the past 35 years, and I live by that. Leadership is shoulder to shoulder. And the last, and this is also mine, if you fail, you failed to take risk. And we are, if nothing else, trying to drive change. So if you're going to reinforce the same thing, you have accomplished nothing. You will fail. You have to fail. And we're going to learn things along that line so that we don't make those same mistakes and we get better at what we do. It's okay to fail. And if you have never failed, turn up that risk. Diversify your risk portfolio. You can have home runs, but you really want to push the envelope. That is our ability. We are altruistic venture capital at the core. And this is our chance to try to make things significantly better through these resources. So now I'm going to tell you a very short story. This is also me. 5.5 years ago, as Bob said, I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. There are only 4 stages, unfortunately. I'd be very happy if they found a 5th. Stage 1 means that the cancer is local, and they might be able to remove it, and you go on your way. Stage 4 means that it's spread. It's just spread. And with stage 4 cancer, it is incurable cancer. Some people call it advanced illness. Some people call it terminal. I use the word terminal because I think it's exquisitely clear. And I like to be exquisitely clear. So I've got terminal cancer. And I had to make some decisions when I was diagnosed. I was living the life of an older adult, a person with complexity and serious illness. And I made a lot of decisions that are not the decisions that other people make. I decided to only do treatment that would help me feel well and not do the things that were going to give me real debility. So I didn't do the everything, throw everything at it. You know what I'm talking about, the throw everything at it. I didn't do the mastectomy. I have breast cancer. It spread to my lower spine. If I remove the breast, I still have the cancer floating around in my body. Do I need to have a surgery? Is it going to do anything good for me? One doctor suggested that. He also wanted to do the most aggressive chemo that could possibly be done, followed by radiation and more chemo. And none of these things, according to the evidence, and yes, we all like to follow the evidence, right? None of these things would have made me better. They would have only made me worse. I told my oncologist what I wanted. I said, I want the Niagara Falls trajectory. I want to feel good, 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 and drop off the cliff. Maximize the good time, compress the bad time. That's what I want. And so I chose to take treatment. I do take treatment here. I'll show you. There. That's me getting treatment. I only take treatment that has the least amount of side effects. And I only do those things that are going to be beneficial to me, and I don't do the things that aren't going to be beneficial. So I didn't do the chemo cocktail. I did a less aggressive version of that. And I didn't do the mastectomy, things that people automatically do. Cancer, got to get it out, right? And I added palliative care. Now, mind you, we've been funding the field of palliative care for 10, 11 years. So long before I was diagnosed, I understood the importance of it. And what happened when I got that palliative care? A lot. I do great. I do. I live a great life. And at the point that I was diagnosed, a strange thing was going on in healthcare. Do you remember the discussion around death panels? Death panels. Gotta love those death panels. So here, I was being told that I have terminal cancer. And I was hearing on the news that we shouldn't be talking to people about what they want at the end of life, because then we're going to sway them into doing things that they don't want done. And I'm thinking, well, you know, it's craziness. When we go to the doctor and we say, take care of us, if we don't get very specific, it's like getting into a cab and saying, take me to the airport in New York City. But we end up at LaGuardia and we want it to be at JFK. That's a big difference. So I started to think, and this is at the beginning of diagnosis, how can care be patient-centered if we're not going to ask the patient? And I decided to go shoulder to shoulder. This was an example of going shoulder to shoulder around palliative care. So this is Niagara Falls, by the way, in case you can't see the picture. That's what I want. And I started out by writing a blog. That blog made its way to the desk of Don Berwick, who walked it to the desk of Kathy Sebelius. And this is while they were embattled. And they invited me to meet with the two of them behind closed doors. And they asked me, how is it that as I was writing about these issues, that I wasn't getting the flack that they were getting? And I told them, I said, you can't kick a dying person for making a decision. If people aren't expressing what it is they want, healthcare isn't going to change. So you need people to be able to speak up. Now, mind you, it's very difficult to get dying people to be speaking up. So I consider this a rare gift, and it is a gift. I'm not suggesting that being ill is a great thing. I still feel great, but I'm trying to make use of this in everything that we do. And it fits with all of the work that we do. So I wrote a piece in Health Affairs that was among the most read in the history of Health Affairs. For NIH, I was asked to give an all-campus talk. And among the points that I made to them was that 0.2% of their funding going to palliative care. There was a report that came out about a year ago that said they doubled their funding. And they sent it to me personally with a very nice note. And I wrote back to them and I said, it still rounds to zero. There was a first Care Innovation Summit in Washington, D.C. West Health, Shelley, raise your hand. West Health helped put this on with CMS and the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT, and it was all kinds of health innovation, and I don't know how I was that fortunate, but I was picked as one of the speakers. I went directly after Atul Gawande. I got the only standing ovation. But in defense of Atul, who I admire beyond anything you should know, it was before he was talking about end of life. So he talked about big data, and I can still remember what he said. He said, you know, the problem with our data today, it's like we're driving down the highway, except we can only see how fast we were going 5 years ago. He was brilliant. But one thing happened, and I never shared this story with you, Shelley, or anybody, so you all are in my intimate secret mode. Somebody from CMS came up to me right before I was about to speak. It was one of their special advisors, a consultant within CMS. And they said, I just don't want you to use the term palliative care. You can say anything you'd like. We just think that it's a very contentious term and it's a difficult time. This was my Jim Morrison moment. So I went out there and I told my story. And I used palliative care all over the place. As a result of that, CMS invited me to do trainings for all of the accountable care organizations. So they were required to do trainings before they would be set up as an accountable care organization. And they wanted them to understand really what's, you know, focusing on what's important to people. And so I did that training. I started doing writing. So I was featured in a lot of different venues. And I also wrote. So I wrote a lot in the Washington Post. Politico featured work that I was doing, and Forbes and Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. Diane Meyer and I were on NPR together. I started giving testimony at the Institute of Medicine around their cancer care, and later was the reviewer for their end of life, their recent report. And I also was able to do several congressional briefings. And these are just a few of the things that happened out of all of this. And this is while I still have a day job. Many grants, many efforts, and using my personal experience as is helpful and appropriate for multiple efforts. I'm just talking about palliative care. But it normalized the conversation to a large degree because there's a human face and maybe even a little humor in it. And people began to understand that it's okay to talk about this. It's a different time. We have Being Mortal 57 weeks on the New York Times bestsellers list. Very different time. So my thought is that leading shoulder to shoulder at the end of the day, this is how I get to live a good life. You know, by doing the things that I'm doing, which really is the work I'm also doing. I get benefit of these things, but I also get to talk about the benefit of these things. So for me, leadership really is walking the talk. I thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast. For more information about Grantmakers in Health, visit us online at gih.org.